If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. It's Thursday. I was in Atlanta yesterday. I'm glad I live in Tallahassee. That's all I'll say about that. Again, welcome to our show. The shows this week write themselves. We've had three local meetings, the school board, the city, and the county commission. And as you know, that's where we like to focus. So we'll get you caught up on some of the issues covered in those meetings and some other things. We've got an update on the story that we've been following at Montford Middle School in relation to how the school deals with some of these more troublesome issues, bullying, gender, sexuality, and got some news to report. Had a good discussion with Superintendent Hannah, and I think you're going to be surprised by some of the things I share. I found out in most cases that there's never a really easy answer to these difficult issues. There's always nuance involved, and so we'll get you caught up on that as well. You know, the Leon County School Board had a meeting, and if you remember over the weekend, there was three separate shootings in one night, one at Cascades Park. We've reported about the violent crime trend here in terms of, property crime going down, but violent crime going up. And, we're getting more reports of students taking weapons to school. And so the safety official with the Leon County Schools made a presentation. We'll go over that a little bit. And obviously go through the meeting notes that we have posted at Talis Reports. We'd like to do a sort of a brief summary of what has happened at these meetings. And we've got the Leon County School Board's meeting briefs up now. We'll have the county and the city notes up later today and tomorrow, I believe. So keep an eye on those. The reason we focus on schools is because it affects so many people, 34,000 students, 4,000 employees, and that's not even to mention the parents who are involved and volunteers. In the next segment, we'll dig into the Leon County School Board meeting. In the bottom of the hour, we'll look at the City of Tallahassee meeting and also the Leon County Commission meeting. We talked a little bit about House Bill 1 and the city's move to join a lawsuit. We'll go over that a little bit again. They went ahead and moved forward, and they're going to let these three groups represent the City of Tallahassee. These three groups, and I don't think it's been reported anywhere else, but we'll give you reiterate the background of these three groups and why this approach by the city is just so misdirected. And I actually agree with them on HB1, but the process here is just allowing your name to be used by these three extreme groups. It's troubling at best, and we'll discuss that. Leon County Commission meeting. Want to again talk about the mandate, the vaccine mandate, and the fallout from this. We made national news with the fines, the $3.5 million fines that were put down by Governor DeSantis, or actually the Department of Health. We're going to run through that again. There's some discussion about it at the meeting. They're going to have a secret meeting or a shade meeting, which is allowed. You're allowed to have a meeting out of the sunshine if you're dealing with legal strategy related to a court case you're involved in. And that's where they're headed now. And, there was a quote by Commissioner Bill Proctor, which is ironic, and I'll share that with you at the bottom of the hour. But I think it indicates that the politics behind this, and we'll go over that. You had the Leon County Administrator, Vince Long, who was the one who has shouldered the responsibility for the policy of the vaccine mandate, and very effective. 98-99% of the employees have been were vaccinated before they had to take some employee actions that they had promised to do. But this was previously more of a political thing, and now it looks like they're moving in the legal realm. I want to talk to you a little bit about what happened over at the City of Gainesville when it started moving into the legal realm. And I think it's definitely worth noting here. I think that there's going to be some, I think, evaluation of the county attorney and her recommendations that she actually made and is sticking by. Because I think, if it is political, then none of these employees are going to be, none of the county administrator or the city, county attorney are going to be in trouble. But they are going to be exposed, I think, if this becomes an issue in a court system where you start talking about the merits of the decision. And we'll explain what I'm talking about in the bottom of the hour. In our last segment, we'll go over some state news. A couple of interesting articles I want to touch on. Florida bankers have taken a position on this potential rule that the Biden administration is pursuing in regards to your checking and savings accounts. And if you're not aware of this, you definitely want to hear this because this will affect everyone. And the Florida bankers have taken a position on this. Excuse me. And also, Charlie Crist is trying to redefine himself. Election time is like a competition. It's like a football game. From my perspective, it's always interesting to see what happens, you know. And sometimes on the football games, you tune in and the first quarter, it's not what you thought it was going to be. The game's not even competitive. Well, you know, this is starting this race for the Democratic nomination between Charlie Crist at this point and Dickie Freed is sort of the way I'm looking at this, is how is this going to unfold? And now we've got, because it's going to be interesting to watch, is it going to be competitive? Is one side going to really have an advantage where it's, you know, everything's over but the voting? One of the things that's interesting is it'll be interesting to see how Dickie Freed eventually responds to Charlie Crist's attempt to, you know, take over this issue of social justice and criminal justice. And this is, Charlie Crist is the former governor who was known as Chain Gang Charlie. And so, I mean, the change here, this is a very drastic change. And it'll be interesting to see if she's going to be able to, make some hay out of this, or she just will let it go. But we'll have a report on what his response is. He's trying to take over this policy domain, criminal justice. And it's sort of ironic given, his previous policies. And the thing about this is, it's not just like it was a policy. This was a nickname given to him. Something that I'm sure you'll see in commercials, and maybe that'll be the tack to take there, but we'll look at that. And before we get out of here, wanted to note an article in, one of the local media outlets talking about the expansion of Danfoss Turbocor. You know, this is a company that's been around for well over 20 years here. I believe it's over right around 20 years in Tallahassee, and they're expanding. Looks like they're going to double their workforce. These are high-tech, high-paying jobs. They're going to create approximately 230 more manufacturing and research jobs, which will double their current workforce. And this has to do with their expansion. And I think we reported on this. Their expansion was approved a year or so ago, and it's going to be a new 160,000 square foot building, which will have production equipment, assembly lines, innovation areas. And the Florida State University Center for Economic Forecasting projects the expansion plans will spur $140 million in total economic impact for Tallahassee's economy. And, the Office of Economic Vitality, which I believe they did get a little bit of they got close to $2.3 million from OEV, the Office of Economic Vitality, which as an incentive for this expansion. And one of the reasons they got that incentive is because advanced manufacturing is one of the key targeted areas here from our economic development people. And so anyway, this is a bit of good news. And, you know, again, if you start looking around the community, there's a lot of good things to see in terms of the economic development. I know we're getting signals of headwinds in the economy from the national perspective, but we've got a lot of cranes moving things here in the community. And this is this jobs with the Danfoss Turbocor is just another one. All right, when we get back, we'll pivot to the Leon County School Board meeting and some other issues related to schools. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. If you're a regular listener of the show, you know we've been spending a lot of time looking at Leon County Schools, covering Leon County School Board meetings, which happen roughly every 2 weeks. And, you know, a lot of it has been dominated by COVID policy, and we've dealt with that. But recently, you know, we've had some issues that we have been following at the middle schools in relation to, you know, I don't want it to be pigeonholed into a specific issue, although it has been, because that's sort of the issue that we're dealing with now. But it really is a broader issue of about policies at middle schools and basically the authority of people, teachers and others in relation to the parent student relationship. And two of the issues, the one we wrote about previously about a gender transition plan written without the parent's notification, and then actually discussed about not telling the parent about it, was one issue. And then we're looking at this thing at Montford in terms of the safe space designations. And I want to go ahead and talk about this first, and then we'll go through the meeting briefs at the end of this segment. But so Superintendent Rocky Hanna has been very accessible for Talis Reports, and I've been able to talk to him on a number of occasions related to these issues. And again, this is one of these things where people want to take it and make the extreme positions and, you know, try to make their point on that. And it turns out there's a lot of nuance here and a lot of issues at hand. First of all, one of the stories we wrote in Montford was how one of the assistant superintendents was actually feeding propaganda from an advocacy group right to the sponsors of Gay Straight Alliance clubs in middle schools. They weren't going through and picking out things that might be appropriate or that did fit within the policies of the state and the school district. They were just forwarding these emails, which were very detailed about different issues. That is something that is being frowned upon now in the school board based on what Superintendent Hanna has said. Also, it was very open about, look, we've got to try to get a handle on specific policies and what they can actually do within these schools. Now, you know, there's a thin line here because you want to give the authority to the schools to run the schools the way they want to run them. But at the same time, there's got to be some, you know, district-wide, statewide policies. The issue we had here were two Montford school officials that were advocating, I would use the word advocating, on this issue that surrounds gender and sexuality. They were asking questions from teachers about the privacy rights of students and the right not to talk to parents. And that it seemed to me way out of bounds. And I think those are issues. Now, one of the things that did come up in my discussion with Superintendent Hamm is that, you know, I think you're going to be surprised that I was surprised that, you know, there's state direction, state guidance. And when I say state guidance, I'm talking about if you go to the Florida Department of Education website, and you talk about and you look at search bullying, there is specific information on some of the things that are available to schools. And if you look at this, and they break it down, and then they talk about LGBT bullying. And they provide links to groups that advocate for a safer environment for LGBT. And these things, and I went to one of the websites, there is a link at Florida Department of Education. They talk about identifying safe spaces, encouraging, obviously, respect for all students, which is a broad statement. But they encourage student-led and student-organized school clubs that promote a safe, welcoming, and accepting school environment. Now, the key there is they're encouraging student-led and student-organized. That's not what we're seeing at Montford when you look at these emails where teachers are basically, they're on the forefront of this. And this is where we run into an issue, okay? When you start allowing what we see on the Florida Department of Education website, we start seeing people take that opportunity and then they expand it. And this is why sometimes when you allow things to happen, it requires more regulation. And so when it says here, you encourage student-led and student-organized school clubs, the emails I looked at, I didn't see any of the organizers or the sponsors of the Gay Straight Alliance clubs saying that, look, students have come to us and said, you know, we want to pass out these safe place flags in every classroom on Montford campus. Now, Because if you look at the safe spaces that they're identifying in this DOE link, it's such as a counselor's office or a designated classroom. So this is not something that is, I think the intent here is to make this school-wide. So this is where we're going to get into the issue of nuance. Can you have a club? Yes. Is it to be led and advocated by teachers? No, not. And so, again, this is, again, this link here says use students' chosen names and pronouns. I think there was, and there's also, issues about access to community-based providers who have experience providing these health services, including medical and mental counseling. So the point I'm making here and the point that the superintendent made to me was, look, this is not just a Leon County issue. Now, he did admit there's issues that we've got to address here locally. But the problem I have with the FDOE, and we'll get into the politics of this, is we have Governor Ron DeSantis, who was a big advocate of this transgender sports bill, which might affect a total of 5 to 10 students in the state of Florida, okay, which was, was covering up the news. But when you get down to the nitty-gritty, they're not dealing with the nuance and the result of some of the stuff they're actually promoting on FDOE's website. So I think it's an issue to keep an eye on, and we're going to continue to report on it. And we're going to reach out to the Florida Department of Education, Richard Corcoran, and see what he has to say about this, because some of the stuff that they're promoting on their website is resulting in what we're seeing in Montford Middle School. And this is people that are now taking, the idea of limiting bullying, and they're taking it to a point to where they're advocating for a lifestyle. And I think that's where you cross the line. So wanted to get that out there. Now, real quick, let's run through the meeting briefs at the school board meeting. During this meeting, the board heard from Chief the Safety Specialist John Hunkiar regarding the safe school assessment. In addition, he gave a brief update on some of the steps that LCS is taking to protect students. He stated every school property is geofenced. That means that they can really track when people are coming in and out of a school, if they have an iPhone, and there are security stations on campuses linked to mass notification systems and school radio systems. Says recently, two school safety analysis were brought on to monitor data and information that comes into the security office. They have evaluated over 3,000 inquiries, and from these inquiries, investigated 276 suicide risk and 106 behavioral risk. So that's news to me, and that's very interesting that they're that engaged in evaluating these inquiries. Some of the new implementations that they're looking at are upgrading radio systems and providing better coverage at stadiums and enhancing visitor management systems. According to Vice Chair Daryl Jones, he has received feedback from principals from several schools, and they have reported an uptick in suspensions and expulsions. Now, some other big news there was Assistant Superintendent Alan Cox updated the COVID data. He said that in the last 8 days, the average number of positive cases is down to about 5 students a day. His recommendations are no changes in the current quarantine protocol, which was recently changed, but is recommending a change in the medical opt-out options for masks to become parental guided action. And the board voted 3-1 to accept a parent opt-out option for grades K through 8. So that is, we made a change now back to where the parents have the opportunity to decide if their parents are going to require a mask. So we're back, and again, people were very critical of Superintendent Hanna, but if you really look at his decisions, I think he's the only one that's changed decisions based on what he's seeing in the field. You can disagree with the timing of his decisions and the actual decisions, but show me, again, I've been very critical of Hanna, but show me another leader that has changed their decision based on what's happening in the field. I'll be waiting for that. So anyway, all right, when we get back, we'll go over the City of Tallahassee meeting and also the Leon County Commission meeting. Some interesting quotes from Commissioner Bill Proctor, so stay tuned for that. I'm Steve Stewart. We'll be right back.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold. It's Thursday. I did hear a weather report that we're going to be getting some cool weather this weekend, so looking forward to that, or maybe the end of the weekend. So looking forward to that. Another good weekend of football. We'll see how good Kentucky is, I assume. And thanks for tuning in. All right, pivot to the city of Tallahassee and the county commission. Wanted to just touch on a couple of issues there that I'm familiar with and, or, you know, they took action on, or at least comment on. You know, we've talked about this previously, the House Bill 1, which is called the anti-riot bill. I did not like the bill to begin with because it's, you know, it was something that I think, again, was done as a political move by Governor Ron DeSantis. We have laws that protect or that are in place for protesters that violate the law. And I think to add more to it is just taking advantage of a situation. And I would be as critical of the left for doing that. And they've, God knows, have done that before also. And so, so now it is still the law. And so there are lawsuits in play, like there are on a number of issues in the state of Florida. And, you know, this has not really been an issue, the whole riot issue here in Tallahassee. But the city of Tallahassee feels like that it is a priority for them to get involved with these with this lawsuit. And, you know, look, they're elected officials, and there's a couple, they get to make these decisions. Now, again, I just don't see why it's that big of an issue for us here. Now, you could argue with the state capitol, and I know the Mayor Daley is talking about the importance of home rule. You know, I don't really know how much this has to do with home rule. This is a state law. You know, about violent actions. But anyway, so they're going to move forward with participating in the lawsuit. The problem I have here is if you go ahead and decide that this is something you want to do, hire a law firm and do it. Don't do what you just did, which is go ahead and saddle up with three left-wing extreme groups that have promised to do this for free. And nothing is for free. What they're doing is these three groups are, they are basically taking the city of Tallahassee's logo, their copyright, and being able to use it to promote what they're doing statewide. And these, again, the three groups, it's not close. This is not a law firm that believes in the home rule argument that Mayor John Daley is making. These are groups that are financed by George Soros, Mark Zuckerberg, and the Southern Poverty Law Group is gotten so far off of its mission that it was originally created for that it's become basically a political left group. And so, again, I understand that we live in a community that leans left. We voted for elected officials on the city commission. They're nonpartisan. And why they would do this, you know, again, I think is an issue that, you know, we're having to deal with at both the national and state level is where, you know, we can't get elected officials just to do what's right. And even on this issue, you know, you could have a policy debate about HB1 or the anti-riot bill. And if they want to challenge it, you know, I would actually support that because I don't agree with the bill. But then to go ahead and do this where you involve these other groups just gets back to making it a partisan situation. And unfortunately, that's where we are. So we'll see where that ends up. Now, if we pivot to the other controversial issue with the Leon County Commission, and this is the vaccine mandate fines from the Department of Health, which made national news. You know, this is a very interesting issue now because, you know, a lot of times people like to yell from a political perspective about things. But once they start getting into the legal system, things get a little bit more dicey. And that's what's happening here. For you listeners who are not aware, the city of Gainesville in Alachua County had a vaccine mandate. They were sued in court and the judge put an injunction in. And her rationale for the injunction, I read, And it resulted in the city of Gainesville basically saying, all right, we're done here. We're not going to do this mandate. Now, I have my reasons. I have my own theories on why they quit, and it had to do with this injunction. The injunction said, look, you know, this is a pretty draconian, or it's a pretty tough action to take. So I'm going to put an injunction in place, and then I'm going to want to know what other steps you took maybe to get to where you needed to be before you actually said, look, if you don't get vaccinated by this experimental drug, we're going to fire you. And so the next step in the legal case was to provide discovery, and they were going to have to justify their decision. And like I said, they bailed. They got rid of the mandate. Now, if you pivot and look at what's going on in Leon County, this is starting to enter that phase. And, you know, ironically, Commissioner Bill Proctor, who is never at a loss for words on a lot of these issues, he made an interesting comment. He said, look, we need to quit talking about this. And his point is this. They're getting ready to move into the legal phase of this. They're going to have a shade meeting, which means that they're going to meet out of the view of the public, and that's allowed because they're crafting legal strategy related to a legal case that they're involved with. But what's going to happen now is when you start moving into this the legal realm is that Leon County Administrator Vince Long and the county attorney, Ms. Osteen, who reports directly to the Leon County Commission, they're going to have to start providing some answers to why they thought this was the correct policy action. And there's going to be some of the same questions. Vince Long is on the record saying, look, we needed to do this because we needed to make sure we could provide services. Well, I think in a court of law, the question is going to be, okay, provide what services were going to be impacted and why you didn't think those services could be provided. Because if you look around Leon County, the city of Tallahassee, Leon County School Board, Leon County Sheriff, other constitutionally elected officers, they are providing services without putting in a mandate. So you know, this is going to be an interesting take on the advice or the decision made by the county attorney and the county administrator. Now, understand that a lot of this obviously has to do with employee relations, and so the county commission really can't weigh in on this from a specific standpoint of directing Mr. Long on what to do. But I know that Brian Welch, County Commissioner Brian Welch, is on record as saying, look, he didn't really like them ratcheting this up. He thought there was some other actions that could be taken. And ironically, those comments that were made months ago is sort of what you're hearing from the judge over in the city of Gainesville case. Is what else could have been done to reach your goal of being able to provide services? Now, the county administrator, I think what he's got going for him on one side is, look, you know, we had to do this and the actions we took were effective. And you can't argue with that. I mean, 98% of Leon County employees ended up being vaccinated. But this, you know, the question is not about the ends justifying the means. The question now is going to be about, could you have got there without having to ask for people to reveal their medical history? And, you know, as the Department of Health noted, there's like 714 violations at $5,000 a pop. So those are going to be the questions that the county administrator are going to have to deal with. Now, on the county attorney's side, which I'm sure the county administrator is going to say, look, you know, I looked to the county attorney for a little direction. You know, she's arguing that this was legal under federal law. Well, you know, you can just say that from a political standpoint, but when you start getting into the legal realm, then you're going to have to start citing exactly, all right, what federal law, what rules, federal rules, you know, do you think applied here? Because now what we're hearing is that, you know, the drug that is being dispensed, the vaccine, was an experimental drug. And actually, it is still experimental. And so do federal laws apply, with mandates, apply to experimental drugs? So that's going to be a question that's going to come up. And so, you know, this is going to be a case worth following. And again, if you go back and look at what happened in the city of Gainesville, you know, it was just suddenly dropped. And you know, with the way the cases are going now with COVID, the trends that we're on, You may see that here. Now, the question would be, how does that impact, you know, the city of Gainesville never fired anyone. So how does that impact the people here that were let go? What we're hearing, which was like about 14 people were terminated. So a lot to be resolved there. And obviously we will keep an eye on that. All right, when we get back, we'll focus on a couple of state issues that have relevance and I would like for you to know about, especially ones that will affect how you do your banking, your savings and checking accounts. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here. Welcome to our Thursday edition. Charlie Crist is in the news. You know, I think everybody that has been following politics or just, you know, general, I guess, both the state and local level will know who Charlie Crist is. What they may not know is the different, I guess, the different personalities and political parties that he's had to deal with. Remember, as a Republican, you know, then an independent and now a Democrat. And what comes with that, you know, it's one thing just to change the monikers beside your name when you're running for office. But eventually it catches up to you in sort of a significant way in terms of policy. And, you know, this environment, as we have talked about, is, you know, sometimes you change from R to D, there's no problem. You know, you got a D by your name, you start talking about certain policies, and everybody's going to vote for you because you're a D, and you're voting against, and you're running against an R. The problem here with Charlie Crist is that he's not running against an R right now. He's going to be running against another Democrat, and so the policy stuff that he was promoting when he was governor of Florida the first time as a Republican, there's no doubt it's going to come out in a big way. And it looks like, you know, one of the things that he is known for, and this is, again, you know, a moniker that Chain Gang Charlie, I think everybody knows who you're referring to. Well, not everybody, but I would say the people that are, you know, that pay attention to the news, but they will know before long. On the Democrat side, exactly who Chain Gang Charlie is. But he came out with his justice reforms this week, and he called it, he announced a campaign called Justice for All. But prior to becoming a Democrat, you know, he was an independent, as I talked about, but he was also a one-term Republican governor from 2007 to 2011, and he also served in the Florida legislature as a Republican. And so his policies, position switches have garnered a lot of attention among some progressives and actually in conservative circles, because that was a big deal when he ran against Rubio. And so this issue here with him taking on the criminal justice angle harkens back to what was going on under the Chain Gang Charlie moniker. And back in the day, PolitiFact Florida noted that, you know, his campaign efforts when Chris was a state senator in 1995, he sponsored legislation to bring back chain gang work crews. And they had been outlawed for nearly 50 years. And he also penned an op-ed in the Sentinel at the time advocating for this chain gang legislation entitled No Ambiguity, Shackle Chain Gang Inmates Together. And you know, he said in the op-ed, I believe that convicted criminals should work and pay their debt to society. They should work on the sides of our highways and byways in visible locations where would-be criminals can see the consequences of committing crime. This would act as a deterrent. And also at the time, Chris traveled to Alabama with the then Secretary of Corrections, Harry Singletary, to observe the chain gangs in action, and Chris responded with a desire to bring similar programs to Florida. So now, as a Democrat, he's starting to try to position himself, you know, as a justice for all and should be focused on rehabilitation and forgiveness and restoring and rebuilding. Now, look, the how's this going to sell in the Democratic primary? I think the point here is going to be, I don't know if you're going to see Nikki Fried even get involved with it to this point. This makes too good of a campaign commercial down the stretch because, you know, it's and obviously there'll be debates and he'll no doubt that he will be he'll be asked about this. But this is something that you're always going to run into when you're changing positions. But in Charlie Crist's, you know, case, it's not just that you are within the same party and you decided that, hey, look, I've become more informed. You know, his issue is that not only did he change his position, he was a Republican when he had this position. So I don't know how this plays in a Democratic primary, but that's going to be the complication he's going to run into. And there's going to be more situations like this when he was a Republican and trying to make a name for himself in Republican circles. He took some very conservative positions. And this is why I think that we haven't seen the last person get into the Democratic primary race for governor is because, you know, you're looking at the agricultural commissioner, Nikki Fried, and now Charlie Crist is the only two in. I think there's going to be a couple of other options. And this gets back to the point of, you know, the winner doesn't have to gain the majority of the primary vote. It's a plurality. And we saw this with Andrew Gillum. You can win the Democratic primary with little, you know, depending on how many people are in there, but it can be around 30 to 35% of the vote. And so anyway, I think this position and bringing back the notion of this moniker, Chain Gang Charlie, is going to be interesting to see how he deals with it, and also interesting to see how his opponents deal with it. So the other issue I wanted to talk about is something that we've heard rumors about, and we might have just mentioned it here on the show, but this has to do with the federal government wanting to know more information about your financial world. And look, you know, we've heard a lot from the Biden administration about tax policy and how it's only going to affect the wealthy. Well, Florida bankers have come out, and they are not happy about a proposal by the Biden administration that would require Americans to share information, banking information related to their deposits and withdrawals. And it says here that in an effort to curb tax fraud, Biden's proposal would require banking information be reported regularly, with reports tracking expenses of $600 or more. Florida Bankers Association President Alex Sanchez and State Chief Financial Officer Jimmy Patronis released statements stating that Biden's proposal is an invasion of privacy. And Patronis noted that how it could encourage more of an underground economy. And, you know, that is, you know, that's the concern. And I think one of the things is, I don't know if it will obviously encourage more of an underground economy, but it seems to me like that this proposal is actually trying to get at some of the underground economy. And the example is, you know, the $600 bank account rule is not for the rich. I mean, it's for the underground economy that takes place now. Think about this lady that, you know, someone, your next door neighbor, that's cutting hair out of her house with no license. All of a sudden, you know, she goes and deposits money weekly from a cash standpoint. You know, this stuff is going to be reported to the federal government. Now, the Florida banking official, Sanchez, stated it's just wrong. It's an incredible invasion of privacy by the Biden administration and by the Internal Revenue Service. And so now here we have the feds trying to get more information. So what does that mean? It means that this is, you know, another opportunity for state government to respond and be at the feds' throats. And now says here, to the degree that Florida can fight back on this, this is why Patronis has asked the Florida's Office of Financial Regulation to brief the governor and the cabinet on this issue and notify Florida's banking community of this threat and coordinate with my office in developing preemptive actions Florida could take to protect Floridians from the IRS. So once again, you're going to have, you've seen this on COVID issues, you've seen this on immigration issues, and now you're going to see it on banking issues where state government is, you know, is challenging the federal government or what they consider to be overreach. And, you know, so this is going to fall under the income tax rules that were put into place that they want to see, you know, deposits or, I guess, withdrawals of over $600. And boy, can you just imagine, first of all, the records are going to have to be provided. This is going to be a cost, obviously, on banks. And then, you know, they're going to have to hire more people to review this. And then that knock on the door, the phone call from the IRS is going to have a lot. It's going to mean a lot more now. Yeah, if this happens to get passed in the legislation that's being considered now up in Washington. So, all right, thanks for tuning in today. That's all we have. Have a great weekend, and we'll be back on Tuesday. I'm Steve Stewart. You've been listening to Above the Fold.